Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. A bit of news. Holiday that I'm on now is progressing really well. The past week, Paula and I, my girlfriend and I, we spent the last week, I think, driving through the Pyrenees, which was really, really good fun. Some fantastic mountains and scenery and canyons and rivers and stuff following there, which is really good. We went into Andorra, which brings, I think, my total number of visited countries now up to, I think, 49 countries I've been to in the world. Don't know how many there are, maybe 100 and blah, blah, 100 and something. But yeah, 49 countries, maybe 50, I'm not quite sure. But that was a lot of fun visiting Andorra. And now we've spent 4 days parked on a beach on the Costa Brava, which is sort of like the northeast part of Spain, and just doing some real holidaying just on this one beach. We've been here for a few days, just sort of hanging around, reading books, writing. I've been writing stuff. Paula's been taking photos, and we've been swimming a lot. Actually, we've done quite a lot of snorkeling. About 100 meters out from the shore, we found this rock with an octopus underneath it. So I keep swimming out and playing with the octopus under the rock. Anyway, it's been a lot of fun here. And as I said, I've been doing quite a bit of reading, not only science fiction, but other stuff as well. And I was going through the Last and First Men by Stapleton. And, it was dragging a little bit, as it seems to do. So I thought, I'll just pick up one of the real books that I have, one of the actual paper books that I have. And I picked up John Barnes's The Sky So Big and Black. So that's... I managed to read it all in around about a day, probably less than 24 hours to read the whole book. So it's been a really, really good holiday. Oh, I made a note here as well. Last time I uploaded some episodes, just for some news in that way, I uploaded 2 episodes at the same time, which sometimes that means people miss the first episode that I upload because iTunes only automatically downloads the latest episode of a podcast feed. So go back and check that. Otherwise, I've got lots of good feedback from recent reviews and different things, but because I'm on holiday, I've not been writing any emails, so I don't have respond... I haven't written any responses back to the emails, but I will include something at the end of today's podcast as a response to one of them. And also finished the edit of my second novel. Well, it's more of a novella called the working title is Monster Story, and I'm probably, as I upload this podcast to the internet, I'll be sending that out to first readers to get some feedback from that. So otherwise, I'm really excited about that, to hear back from a new writing project. So let's get on to it. The Sky So Big and Black by John Barnes. A little bit of background with my history with John Barnes. I read the book Encounter with Tiber by John Barnes and Buzz Aldrin. And it was good. Sort of good. It was good and bad. I can't remember what I gave it. Maybe 2.5 stars, I think. And it was the second time I've read it, and I thought, the second time I was reading it, I was thinking, wow, this is hardly as good as I remember. I mean, there's not a lot going on here at all. You know, it was really annoying. And then at the end of last year, when I was going back through all of the books that I'd read in 2008, so giving a little bit back, a bit of feedback about them after a bit of thought, I was thinking, wow, I can't remember all the bad stuff. What didn't I like about this book? And I actually sort of had to go back and look at some of the notes that I wrote at the time, because my memories of the book were a lot better, or my memory of the reading experience was a lot better than my memory of the reading experience. I can remember being really annoyed with the book, but I can't remember what I was really annoyed with. So it's sort of one of these bizarre books where the good stuff seems to shine through after age and the bad stuff fades with time. But anyway, I thought, well, there must be some good in there. I don't know how much was written by Buzz Aldrin and how much was written by John Barnes, but I thought I'd give him a go as a solo artist, and I found The Sky So Big and Black in the second-hand bookshop there in Berlin, so I thought, hey, why not? So I give it a go. It's published in, let me just look here at the beginning, 2002, and it's around about, let me look at the end here, around about 315 pages long. I'll just get straight into it. The world that it's set on, most of it's set on Mars. It's sort of like in the Mars being terraformed kind of... sort of age, sort of 21st century, late 21st century is when it's set. And when I started reading it, I thought, wow, this has got a lot of history. There seems to be a very well-developed timeline from sort of where we are now up to that point. And that's generally a sign that it's not a standalone book, but it read very well as a standalone book. But then when I was on the internet a few days ago, I checked on the Amazon.com. And it turns out it's actually part of a series called Meme Wars. So that explains it, really. But you can read it as a standalone novel. I'm not quite sure how much reading this as a standalone novel is would spoil the previous books, but maybe it will spoil them, I don't know. But I think actually seeing the quality of John Barnes writing this, I reckon he has probably written this so it stands alone as a book and it doesn't spoil the previous books. So, like, that's what I'd like to think. So what's happened in the future is that humans are spreading out across the solar system. They've got some colonies on Mars, of course, and on Titan and on Mercury and all these different things like that. And what happens is that back on Earth, the meme wars take place, and that cuts off Earth from the rest of the solar system because, like, this this computer program manages to take over a... sorry, I'm getting distracted here. I'm sitting with the back of the doors open, and there's this naked couple of a man and a woman having a mud fight on the beach, or sort of like a dirt fight, gravel fight on the beach in front of me, and she's got very nice breasts, I must admit. Sorry about that little interlude. I was just completely distracted there. Yeah, so anyway, so what happens is this computer program called One True sort of takes over, not just sort of like the computer infrastructure, but also people's minds, and that's what the whole Meme Wars books, I'm sure, is about this computer taking over people's minds. And there's this one word that you can say, or this sort of phrase that you can say, which is let override, let overwrite. And if you say that to this computer program, it overrides some of your memories and overrides and overwrites your memories and makes you do stuff. So that was when you actually read about that, it sounds like a quite horrific kind of situation where people losing their humanity doing things that the One True wants them to be. So what happens is that the only thing stopping this One True spreading across the across to the moon and across to Mars and to the asteroid colonies is the time delay. The speed of light is what's stopping it, because it needs to have like an immediate feedback of what you're thinking to sort of analyze your thoughts and work out how to affect your thoughts in that different way. So what they do is they just shoot anything coming from Mars and don't listen to any... No, so they shoot anything coming to Mars from Earth and don't let anything approach, and also they sort of chop up the transmissions from Earth and don't receive them at all, you know, and if they do receive any transmissions, it's chopped up into small sections and sort of rearranged and randomized in certain ways, which is pretty cool. Like I said, most of the action takes place, all of the action on this book takes place on Mars, though, and you get these groups of people called eco-spectres, which are sort of like, they go out and they try and release water into the atmosphere and carbon dioxide into the atmosphere to try and heat up Mars and to try and terraform it. So that's the kind of people that we follow. And so let's get onto the story. Yeah, it's a coming-of-age story by, let me look at the name on the back of the book here, Terpsichore Murray. And she's known throughout the book as just Terry, Terry or Telmel as a nickname there. But she's this young girl, I reckon around about, 16, 17? And she is an eco-spectre. And her mother died earlier on before the book starts when she was very young. And then it follows her time leading up to her adulthood exam to become a full adult, and so she's all, you know, there's like a test of what you know, but also a test of your emotional levels too. So all of the first part of the book, pretty much the first two-thirds of the book, is setting up the world and getting on to the time when she becomes a full adult and goes out by herself and starts leading an expedition by herself, or, you know, still with her father, but as an equal partner with her father. So what they do is they go out and they've got these suits, which are really cool suits that they're like space suits, but you can just, when you're cold and tired, you just lay down on Mars and you just hang out there and you put your solar panels out and it recharges for you, and they just live in these suits like 24 hours. They sleep in the suits. But they do have these tents that they can put up a tent. It's not so much a tent, it's sort of like this thing that gets processed and built automatically, which is very strange. But yeah, so they go into a tent and they have a wash and get ready for this gathering. And that's what the whole first half of the book is, them getting ready to go to this gathering where all of these other eco-prospectors gather together and have sort of like their twice-yearly meeting. And that's where she's going to have her full adult exam. And, of course, this is all set up right at the very beginning of the book, but it's all about her, you know, her emotional journey and her, like, coming of age, as I said. And that's, you know, you're reading the book and you think, well, this is a bit slow and there's going off, and then they go off and talk to these other people, you know, when they get to the gathering and they tell about the history of Earth and the history of Mars and the history of this and the history of that and the story of this, and they talk about this technology and that technology. And I'm just thinking, okay, it's a little bit slow here, so it drags a bit of time. time. But then you realise that the quote on the back by Publishers Weekly, my least favourite provider of quotes for books, because it seems like they just love everything, because I guess they work for the publishing companies, so, or it's, you know, it's tied so much with the publishing companies, they just want to sell as much as possible. And it goes, "Vivid, Barnes is up to his old tricks in creating a sharp novel that is not about who or what the readers think it is, and it comes with a near perfect ending." And of course, when I got to the ending of this book, I was just like, that is awesome. It really does come up with this near perfect ending. There's not a lot more that I want to say about it, because it was spoiled. But yeah, it's very impressive what he does. And even though at the times when you're thinking, wow, this doesn't have a lot to do, oh, he's talking a lot about the history here, every single thing that's mentioned in the book, pretty much every single thing that's mentioned in the book, comes back together and ties in. Even the time when you're like hearing about someone's relative and they're doing this and they have a discussion about politics and they have a discussion about socialism and all the kind of stuff, and you're thinking, wow, is this just what's going on here? And you actually realise every single thing in this book has got something to do with the story, even when you're reading it and you don't think it is. And I thought that was really, really impressive writing by John Barnes. And it's almost like he's gone, okay, I just want to take sort of like a Heinlein kind of coming of age story, like a juvenile novel, and tell that. And then and he does. But then, of course, there's this big twist, and you realize actually there's a load more going on here than you imagine at the beginning. But I don't want to spoil it, so I've left out loads of stuff about the story here. It's like I say, what I've just said sounds a bit boring, but no, it really isn't. It is more than just the characters. So I get onto some of the characters here. There is Terry, and she's a bit annoying, but then she's meant to be annoying, and she gets better, but then she's meant to get better as well. That's the whole point. The story is told from the point of view of her psychologist. And here's a big thing that I didn't mention just before in the story, is that the psychologist is getting her to tell her stories, to record them, because he's then going to wipe something out of her memory. So you know there's this big crisis that's coming up, but you're not quite sure what it is, but you know that it's going to be really bad for Terry. And you're thinking, well, what could it be? You know, her mother died and that wasn't taken out of her, but there's something there. So she's telling her stories to then play back to her later, so she can have some distance from her story and still have sort of like know what happened to her in her own words, from her own mouth, but not have to live through the bad experience. So that's the setup. So of course, at the beginning, she's this annoying kid, and by the end of it, you sort of get to like her. Her dad is a very interesting character who, you know, he's this long-term eco-spectre, and he's this big expert, and he always knows what to do in all the situations, and is teaching her all her life lessons, which is pretty cool. Then you get Terry's love interest throughout the first half of the book, which I'm not really giving anything away to say that she does break up with him in some way, because it's like so predictable. Perry is Terry's boyfriend, but they spend so much time out alone in their own little groups. He's off with his family group, and she's just off by herself with her father. And so they talk to each other on the radio each night and stuff like that, but they seem to be drifting apart in the relationship. And the more you learn about Perry, the less you like him. And you're like, well, what does Terry see in this Perry guy? And then, of course, when they break up, she can suddenly go, oh, yeah, now I can admit to myself how dull he was and how ignorant he was and how boring he was and how stupid, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And you realise that's what her dad's been wanting to think all the time, and that's what you've been thinking all the time. But Terry has been sort of trying not to think that throughout her story that she's been saying so far. So overall, there are other characters there as well. All of them seem to be, quite rounded. There are a few people who seem to be, I'm thinking they're like returning characters from the previous novel, so I feel like I should know them better, and I feel like they should be a bit more rounded. Maybe they're sort of presuming that I know who they are. John Barnes is sort of presuming who I know who they are, and there's a bit about religion where I'm thinking, oh, should I know this? And I'm thinking, okay, in the meme wars, and you find out about these people who were fighting in the meme wars, I'm thinking, okay, these maybe are the characters that were in these previous novels that I'd like to read about in the previous novels, because I definitely will go and check out some more of John Barnes' work. I know that. And yeah, I said, and then there's the doc himself, like the unknown guy he's sort of like providing the frame story. It's like, I'm listening back to some of the tapes, or I'm rewatching the tapes that Terry and I recorded with these interviews that I did with her. And he gets this good character. And he's sort of like this alcoholic character right from the very beginning. And you realize that he gets into Terry's story quite a bit, because when she's talking to him, and then she'll say, what do you think about this, doc? oh, I thought so. But you don't actually hear or read what he says back to Terry. You just read her reaction to what the doc says back to her. And again, it's this really clever device that you sort of have a one-sided reaction that you sort of get his attitude towards different things, even though you don't hear what he's saying. And then you get his attitude in his own sort of little frame story sections that are spread through the Terry's story at the same time. So yeah, lots of interesting characters. But then again, it is, like I say, this coming-of-age story. So if you don't like reading about young people, young teenagers in space finding their way across Mars and stuff like that, this book probably isn't for you. But if, like me, you don't mind reading that, especially when there's a lot more in the novel going on than you thought, it's well worth it to spend some time with these characters. Next up, the relationships. Yeah, again, not really a lot to say here. I mentioned that before. Although there is this kind of thing where I've mentioned this a few times in books recently. The new character of the opposite sex who comes in two-thirds of the way through the book, even after sort of some previous relationships of the main character, there's always this like, now we meet the new love interest. And that's, I don't want to give anything away, but there's like a little clever twist on this on that in this book as well. So, like you say, this convention is being used here by John Barnes in a way that I didn't expect, but really liked, which was good. The science behind it, the memes are fun, but in the kind of sort of like a meme which gets passed from person to person as some kind of mind controlling kind of thing. Not really explained, because I think, like you say, this is probably explained a lot more in previous books in the series, but it's a lot of fun there. But the most fun stuff is like the on Mars tech, like the spacesuits that they wear and the eco-specting equipment that they use and lots of good stuff like that. Again, I don't really want to give too much away about it, because that's, you know, that's what the book is about this lifestyle and about reading it. Although I did have a slightly, a little bit of a worry about it, because I'm thinking, like, they're carrying all this stuff and they do what's called rooing, which is, like, I guess, hopping like a kangaroo across the surface of Mars. And I'm thinking, wow, they're carrying a lot of stuff. And they say they have this and they have that and they have this and they have that. And then it works out, okay, well, a lot of this stuff is obviously expandable and inflatable. So they have, like, these small things that they pump full of something, which is synthesized from local materials. And I like that, but it seemed a little bit too much like magic, a little bit too much like alchemy. And you're thinking, wow, they're doing all of this just with solar power. So I'm just thinking that the level of technology needed to have this sort of low level eco-specting with people going out with no vehicles, it's just them walking across the country across the planet and doing this and that. I'm thinking, well, the actual level of technology that they're taking with them probably means that their job doesn't have to be fulfilled in the way that it is. But again, it's one of those things that you just got to go, okay, well, I don't understand exactly what's going on here. I've just got to give it to John Barnes that he's going to tell me an interesting story. And thankfully, he did. If it was that in a book which wasn't as well written or wasn't as interesting or wasn't as well plotted, I wouldn't have let it stand. You know, it's in that same way that people, you know, when I talk about Snow Crash and just it's full of all kinds of rubbish science and rubbish this. That also talks about sort of brain control and memes and things like that too in a similar kind of way that's going on in this book. But the thing is, it goes into too much detail, and if it just sort of said, oh yeah, this happens, you'd be like, oh, like you do in The Sky So Big and Black, but it goes into too much detail. But then there's thousands of other things wrong with that book as well, maybe hundreds of other things, issues that I have with that book as well. So the one or two things in this book, which I would normally, if it was in a bad book, I would really rag on, you know, and go down on. But, you know, like I say, when you're overall happy with a book, you can forgive it a little bit more there. You just go, okay, this is cool. So yeah, the science is fun, even though a little bit unbelievable at times. But again, the cool stuff, like I say, is what you read about, the way that they find this big bit of ammonia in the I think it's ammonia or something like that, in the ground, and the way that they get it out, the technique that they bore a hole down there, is actually really, really good fun. But again, if that level of technology was possible, they probably wouldn't need two humans out there trying to find the ammonia in the first place, which is one of those strange things. Onto a bit about the writing style. It's sort of this very folksy kind of style in this, like, and it's got this sort of made-up lingo as well. They have this, you know, like I mentioned before, they roo across the ground. And this is never explained. It's just like, we go rooing, and you realise, they're talking about kangarooing. In other words, hopping across the surface of Mars, because walking takes too long, and running, you know, so they've got this sort of, like, bouncy kangaroo kind of motion going on there. And it's never explained, and there's lots of other stuff that goes on here as well. Like, stuff is a skosh, and a skosh means a little bit. So they go a skosh far, and it means they go a little bit too far. It's never explained, you just pick it up. And there's some of them which I didn't really understand and never really picked up. But again, didn't really get in the way of understanding the book, but it did give it some nice flavour. Normally, I sort of get a bit annoyed with this, but because it's told mainly from the point of view of a teenage girl, you can sort of let it go in a way. So that's pretty good. Also, as I mentioned before, the way that it's told, again, you're first reading it and you're thinking, okay, why is so much time being spent on this? And why is so much time being spent on that? And like I say, it seemed a bit slow and it seemed a bit going too much into conversations. But then, you know, you realize, Terry is wanting to make these recordings and say as much as she possibly can in as much detail as she possibly can to be able to, you know, then get the same experience from the conversation afterwards as we are from reading it. And it's this really weird kind of thing that you always think about the point of view. Like when it's first person, you always think, okay, it's a first person book, which means, you know, the conventions are that the person at the end isn't, you know, they're not going to die, you know, and if it's a third person, you know, they have to find out. And it's this weird thing with point of views in books that sometimes you're thinking, well, that person can't be telling this story because they wouldn't be thinking that. Or why are they telling this person that much stuff? Because they already know it and the person that they're talking to already knows it. And it's only us as the reader who doesn't know it. And there are a few of those issues in the book, but generally you sort of let it go, you know. If it was just sort of like a fly on the wall book or just as a normal first person book, you can avoid a lot of those troubles because they're actually addressing you as the reader in a way. Whereas this book, they're addressing the two main characters, or the two characters in the book who you actually read about in the first person, which is the doc, the psychologist, and Terry herself are talking to each other. And sometimes I'm thinking, they both know that. That's history that they share. Anyway, so that's a bit about the writing style, which, again, just generally well-flowing and readable. Like I say, a real page-turner. I read it all in just a few hours within a 24-hour period, which is, again, mainly because I'm on holiday, but I wouldn't do that. Say I'm not doing that with Last and First Men, for example. Finally, a little bit about the themes of the book. There seems to be a lot about freedom and personal responsibility. Like I say, it's about growing up, which is, you've always got a lot of these different things coming in there about being responsible and being about adults. But also, there's wider themes of that as well. It talks about in the book, you know, the history of the meme wars and about people losing control of their minds and becoming... well, not so much childlike, but compared to the one true meme, mind virus, computer virus kind of thing, you know. Nobody has any responsibility. So there's a whole lot of, like, using the parallels of that to bring in about growing up and about this and that. Also, there's quite a bit of talking about, like, the political system on Mars as well. And again, you're reading it thinking, well, is this actually the political system that John Barnes likes? You know, that's what Kim Stanley Robinson writes about. You know, he sets out his own sort of political views and then discusses the problems with it or not. I'm not quite sure what John Barnes thinks, but there's quite a lot of like libertarian attitudes in there, and again, their kind of ideas of like the social responsibility of small groups. I guess that's what this book's talking about as well. It's about what's the smallest social unit of people that you can have and still have a functioning society, and then where will larger groups fit in and where will smaller groups fit in? Of course, the largest group on Mars is about a city. But then when some disaster strikes later on, you're thinking, okay, well, how helpful are they to the smaller people? And you can't rely on the larger groups of people if you're a smaller group out there as an eco-spectre. And then you think, well, what's the bigger society? Well, that's, of course, Earth in itself, but that's become being completely taken over. You know, there's lots of different ideas of, like I say, talking about the social responsibility and the here and there, you know, all the kinds of stuff going on. And that's all pretty cool. And there are some other themes as well, but I guess I'll let you discover them for yourself when you read this book. And in conclusion, I really do think you should read this book. It's one of my favourite books for a long time. I'm not saying it's the best book I've read, but as me just sitting down and reading it and discovering a new world, which is obviously well-formed and with quite a lot of logic, and then discovering that the story was a lot more than I was expecting, and also, in a way, a lot more than I could possibly expect it to go. And then when you get into the last sort of like quarter of the book and I actually realise what is going on, I'm just like, oh, this is so cool. Oh, this is so cool. And you get this sort of like playing with the form of novel and playing with the storytelling in a way that you just don't expect from the beginning of the book. Oh, two naked ladies just walked past me again. We're not on a nudist beach, but I think, well, maybe we are. I don't know. Anyway, so I'm going to give this book in total, just for enjoying it so much, 4.5 stars out of 5, which I guess means a few books like that in a row. No, not a few books. I guess I think I gave Ender's Game that kind of thing, that kind of rating. and then 2 3.5 books in a row before that. And here is the new segment. Someone asked me on by email. He said, okay, what you should do is that when you finish doing your books reviews is actually then you put up online, hey, if you enjoyed this book, I also recommend this book. And he says, is there a service like that? And I said, well, okay, maybe on goodreads.com you could see if someone looks like, if they really liked a book, and then see what books they also really liked. But that just really goes for generic likes and dislikes of people. And then on amazon.com you always got like the person who bought this book also bought this book, but it's generally books by the same author. And like I say, I would really, really recommend someone read John Barnes's The Sky So Big and Black, but maybe Encounter with Tiber, I would just say, okay, only read that if, well, I'm not sure why you'd read that, because, you know, it's a bit tedious to get through, but there are some good stuff in it. So it's that kind of weird thing that you don't always want to recommend stuff. Who was the guy who wrote Marrow? Let me just see if I can quickly look this up now. There's the guy called... Yeah, Robert Reed. I read Marrow, and it's like 2.5 stars, maybe 3 stars, I can't remember what it was. And then I read, by accident, Down the Bright Way, and it was like one of my favourite books of the last year again. So it's that kind of thing that you want some different recommendations. What am I trying to say? Yeah, different recommendations of different authors, but of the same kind of stuff. So here we go. If you like this book, or if you think, I'll put it this way, if you like these other books, you'll probably enjoy this book quite a lot. So example, if you liked Robert A. Heinlein's Have Spacesuit Will Travel, it's about, well, quite a bit of that book, or the beginning parts of that book, is about one man and his spacesuit and getting across Mars and the problems that you have with spacesuits and stuff like that in space, which I guess Heinlein was a technician, and this was obviously his manifesto on spacesuits and the way that they should work and the way that should be used on the moon and stuff like that. So that's a really good fun book. This book has a lot of the similar kind of stuff in it. Also, if you like Terraforming of Mars, of course I'm going to recommend Red Mars and Green Mars and Blue Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson, because that is like the manual of how to terraform Mars. But there are other books about terraforming Mars as well, which again, I can't think of any off the top of my head that I'd really recommend as much as Red Mars, because that's what it's around about. And also, I'd recommend Verna Vinge's A Deepness in the Sky, because that also talks about sort of mind control in the, not in the same way, but like in a way. And also, but again, in this way, it's going to be difficult in this sort of like Luke also recommends kind of thing, because Verna Vinge sort of deals with so many different things in his larger science fiction novels that almost any book could be tied back to some of the concepts he discusses so well and the themes that he discusses so well in that book. But otherwise, yeah, check out The Deepness in the Sky, which is a fantastic book. In fact, I think all three of the books that I've recommended here are fantastic books, and that's why I say if you like this book, you'll like elements of all three of those books. How Spaceship Will Travel is a small book. Verna Vinge's Deepness in the Sky is a chunky book. And then Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars is epic science fiction, future history kind of thing of the politics and terraforming of Mars, which is pretty cool. So I hope you've enjoyed that new little segment there, and I hope you enjoyed this book. Again, I can't recommend this book enough. To be honest, though, I'll probably look back at it in a year's time and thought, why did I think that was so good? But I think the feeling of reading through to the end of this book, maybe just because I read it so quickly and got through the stuff which I thought was a bit slower more quickly than I would have done otherwise. Maybe if I was sort of reading it in like an hour here or like 20 minutes there and stuff, I wouldn't have enjoyed it so much. But I did enjoy it, and that's what my star rating comes down to, pure subjective enjoyment. So the next book that I'm going to read is I'm still reading Last and First Men again, but that's a book that I've sort of got to read in sort of chapter at a time, and there's a lot of chapters in that book. But maybe I'll go for something a bit more interesting. I have two more physical books. I thought this was actually, I only had one more physical book with me, like paper book with me, and that was Steel Beach by John Varley. Again, this is going to be another giving an author a second attempt after reading a book which didn't really satisfy me the first time out, because I really hated Red Thunder. But I thought, you know, everyone's recommending Steel Beach, so I'll give it a go. And also, I got the Stephen Donaldson's Gap series, the first two books of that, and I'm... Lots of people are telling me to read and review this. I think I read the first book before, called The Real Story, it's called. But I'm going to start again, because I've not read the following books in the series. So I'm going to start again and read The Real Story. I have it right here, and I'll probably start that probably this afternoon sometime, because I've not got any plans for this afternoon except sit on the beach and watch topless women enter and leave the sea and hang out and read books of their own. Sorry about my... gawking of women here. Anyway, so if you've enjoyed that and you want to find out more about my holiday, I made a note here, find out more, not about my holiday, but about my travels and videos and music and writing and everything that I do, just check out lukeburridge.com/blog, or for small updates, follow me on Twitter, which I guess is I'm just at Luke Burridge at Twitter. And if you want to find out about what books are coming up in the future, what books I have on my iPod, what books I have on my phone, and what books other people have recommended to me, go to goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. There's also a group on there of listeners, so become my friend and become friends of other science fiction book review podcast listeners. And otherwise, if you've got any feedback, email me luke@juggler.net is the best way to get in contact with me, and you can email me with any feedback, with any recommendation, book recommendations. Although check out the recommended by SFBRP listeners list on my goodreads.com thing to make sure other people haven't already recommended the books too many times. And also, if you want to read my my second novel, well, it's more of a novella, like I said before, email me and you could be one of the first people to read it, but you have to give good feedback about that novel. But if you're listening to my my reviews, it means that you have good taste, I guess. You'll probably enjoy my novel. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I write the novels or I write the stories that I want to read, and I write the science fiction that I want to read. So, of course, I think my own work is awesome, but you don't need to agree if you don't want to. Anyway. So that's about it. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.